This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. Power Talk with Thabiso Kotane, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
Eight minutes after 10. So, yes, we continue to focus on the budget speech. And, of course, we are still looking for your opinion just to get a sense of your impressions in as far as the budget speech is concerned. Because yesterday, Finance Minister Tito Mboweni announcing a raft of changes for South African consumers and businesses during his budget speech. Every year, a national budget is a balancing act, and he tried his best, according to most people that reacted to it, even though some political parties had serious reservations about what he did not say that they expected him to say. And amidst the fight against COVID-19 and the associated lockdowns eroding an already shaky economy, the finance minister and his team at Treasury had a particularly hard task, and that much I think it's fair to say. And we're going to reflect on it though, and just get reactions from various stakeholders, and of course would like to get your sense as well. 0861 987 000. Interestingly as well, as you might have heard from the news bulletin there, COSATU saying that it is now taking a serious look at its relationship with the ANC, because I suppose they were expecting that perhaps the current administration would listen to them more and implement their aspirations or wishes or their demands even more. But a lot of South Africans actually have been saying, why are you still aligned with the ANC? Because the more you continue aligning yourself with the ANC, the more you will be hoodwinked to go along with the decisions of the ANC, which in the long run will hamper the interest of your own members as COSATU. And some people have actually been upfront to say the problem with COSATU today perhaps is because it is an alliance partner of the ruling party, which is something that is an anomaly in most countries, where you find labor federations being far away from the government and exercising that particular independence. But be that as it may, probably something that you also want to talk about. 0861 987 000. We spoke to Teboho Kasi, if you remember, just to get his expectations with regards to the state of the province address in Gauteng. And today we are joined by Teboho as well to reflect on what the finance minister had to say with regards to SMMEs. Teboho, good morning to you.
Good morning, Thabiso, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. We are also joined by Crystal Duncan Williams, a project leader, youth lead at Youth Capital. But good morning to you, Crystal, and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Thabiso.
Teboho, the Minister of Finance was speaking yesterday. And as far as SMMEs are concerned, are you happy?
I hate to sound like a repeated record, or to even be seen to be joining the bandwagon of criticism. But there is really very little, if anything, that the minister has said that would excite the SME space insofar as changing the plight of SMEs and making sure that whatever commitments or promises were made in the past budget speech and subsequent MTBFs were actually realized. And there is nothing really that suggests that they're taking the problems that have arisen, especially since the introduction of the lockdown and the consequent relief package that they announced. It is just a mess. And quite honestly, it's an indictment that even today, only just over 10% of the allotted funding that was meant to help SMEs have been dispersed. It is just sad when you don't get a report back to say, this is what happened, this is how we're going to do to mitigate the problems that arise.
What did you expect to hear, Teboho, from the minister?
I would have loved, really, to hear specifics. I know that it might very well be that it's the responsible department that will come up with the specifics, but to say what is going to happen with regards to reviving the economy, or what has been set aside to ensure that there's a reallocation of resources to help small businesses, say, in the tourism sector, whom we know that they've been facing the most hardship insofar as their income streams having dried up over the hard lockdowns and subsequent minimal lockdowns. And we really haven't seen anything of the sort. In fact, instead, what we see is we hear that, which subsequently has been confirmed, that there may also be talk of pumping more money into ailing SOEs like SAA, for example, and Telkom, without saying we've put them on terms and this is what we expect them to do. And even the banks, to say we're putting the banks on terms to say this is what they need to be doing. We need to see more progress insofar as $200 billion that was announced as loan guarantees. And remember, these are loans. It's not a grant. These are loans to say they need to be paid back and there are conditions attached to them. It's not like, you know, it's just money being dished out belonging to the banks.
Let me come to you, Crystal. The minister spoke about, 11 billion rands that have been set aside to enable job creation specifically for young people. Is it something that you welcome, or do you still have reservations? Because some people are saying no clear details there in as far as how, for who, and how, and all of that.
Yeah, and I think I want to kind of echo some of the sentiments that Teboho just made. You know, it's in the implementation that we always fall down. So we can have these promises made and we say, that's great, but what happens in practice? Where's the reporting on what happened to the money from last year? So we welcome the mention of the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative, which was launched in SONA 2020. And at Youth Capital, we're very much in support of the plan because it builds on existing initiatives. And we really believe that the problem in the youth unemployment space has been this idea of creating new things constantly and throwing lots of money at the problem instead of saying, what have we done? What has worked, what hasn't worked, and how do we implement things effectively so we can make sure that we get the best bang for our buck, which I think is a similar sentiment to Boho's, to understand if we're going to put this 11 billion into this initiative, how do we learn from community-based organizations who have been working with young people and have been doing a lot of this work on a small scale already, and governments need to be engaging with the people on the ground to understand how to roll out these interventions at scale. For example, you know, under the economic stimulus package, young people were hired as teaching assistants. Mm. Now, there are many NGOs who were doing this kind of work before, and Youth Capital really welcomes this because, on the one hand, young people get a little bit of work experience, which they can use to build their CV and help them access a next opportunity. And at the same time, their community benefits. These teaching assistants are desperately needed in schools where teachers and teachers are overworked. So, you know, this is a great initiative, but how do we make it really count for a young person to have a meaningful opportunity for a young person, as opposed to, you know, just spending money for money's sake, and then when the stimulus package ends, these young people are back in the unemployment pool again, having not gotten a transferable skill or a reference letter or something they can use to access that next learning or earning opportunity.
What saddens me, though, is that the same young people who are co-opted, at least those that are lucky enough to be co-opted in these learnerships and in these teacher assistants, and those that were co-opted to stand on the gates there to sanitize the kids and make sure that things are under control during COVID-19, are the same ones that will come back to people like us here at various media platforms and say, we have not been paid what we've been promised. And they go into these learnerships in government departments, they become errand boys and girls. They buy coffee, they make sure that there's A4 paper in the printing machine, and they come back and they say, we've learned absolutely bugger all from this experience.
Exactly. Exactly. So, the idea was it was supposed to be a training component as part of this teaching assistant role, at least. And we were actually in the process of reaching out to Young People on Network to understand, did that really happen? And I think, like with everything, in some places it probably did happen and in other places it didn't. So we're busy kind of trying to investigate that, because that training component, as you say, is so critical for young people to step into that next opportunity. And then the other thing, when you look at learnerships and internships, there's huge backlogs at the CETA with people getting the certification. So they've completed the learnership and the requirements thereof, but they don't have a certificate to prove to potential employers that they've got this, this learnership, they've done the qualification. Because the CETA backlog administratively is so poorly run. And so this issue of certification is another thing that we're trying to highlight this year. We know that at TVET colleges, there was an article at the end of last year saying there's a backlog going back to the 90s, which is unacceptable. These are young people that have a qualification that could be put to work in the economy to grow the economy, and they're unable to access jobs because they don't have the certificate to prove that they have the skills. So these are the kind of inefficiencies we really need to address if we are to make the most of these billions being thrown at youth unemployment initiatives.
Yeah, Teboho, I'm tempted to ask, what happened to this big concept called revitalizing the township economy, whatever that is?
As I respond to that, let me also echo, the same sentiments as expressed by Crystal. And it is frustrating when you see young people who are supposedly to be the beneficiaries of an intervention that will enhance their chances of being economically active, being scuppered. And it is even much more so damning that those institutions or individuals who are tasked with the responsibility to help them join the employment ranks are actually just milking the system. They're just making money for themselves. We don't see the outcomes. We don't see the results insofar as saying this is how many people who have trained for this particular type of jobs, and this is the percentage or the number that we have managed to secure the jobs. We know that the economy is shrunk. The unemployment ranks are swelling. And one of the key things that need to be happening is to ensure that you stimulate the survival, an emergence of new small enterprises who could then, through a pull effect, be able to absorb new entrants in the market. Mm-hmm. Because big companies would shy away from people who may just be learners, who may not have much to bring on board. But you might find that small enterprises would be much more amenable or inclined to absorb people with not so much huge experiences and make sure that they can actually empower them to be employable in future, in the broader mainstream economy. Mm-hmm. And yes, when you talk about the township economy, last year Premier Makhura mentioned the issue that they are going to be revitalizing the industrial complexes, smaller factories in the industrial parks.
Industrial parks, yes.
We are still to hear a thing as to what happened, what is the progress today, because yesterday the Premier hasn't said anything about that commitment he made last year. Yes, we understand the problems that beset government, including the provincial and local government, insofar as COVID is concerned, but nothing stopped them to have continued to intervention that would, in a way, help mitigate the adverse effect of a lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing, as far as you know, as the president of the SMME Forum, has actually moved there. It was just an announcement, and that was it.
I don't want to sound alarmist, but I didn't hear or pick up anything to the extent that anything has happened. We've had talks about something's going to happen in Babelegi. Nothing has happened in Babelegi, unless, of course, maybe we missed something. But to the credit of the provincial government, for example, we do know that there is achievements made insofar as the automotive industry is concerned. We've had the reports, the launch of the Tshwane the economic zone, is it TAFES or whatever it is, Tshwane automotive economic zone.
Mm.
we need to see tangible results insofar as we are targeting so many SMEs and so many employees to come through that. I think they did mention the number of potential jobs that are going to come. But we need those commitments to actually be measurable and be monitored to ensure that we don't wait until 5 years down the line and say, what happened? Nothing really happened insofar as, and we find that the same regular people who've been benefited from the system, including big companies, continue to do so. We need to ensure that we provide a marketplace for emerging small businesses in that, using the automotive sector as an example, and the same thing could be done to be replicated in many other industrial parts where you can have manufacturers of parts that would go into these cars as part of the supply chain ecosystem.
Our guest is Crystal Duncan Williams, who is a project leader, youth lead at Youth Capital. Tebogo Kas is the president of the SMME Forum. And of course, we are taking your calls as well, 0861-987-000.
Getting the nation talking. Power Talk with Thabiso Kotane.
5 minutes after 10, we continue to speak about what the minister said yesterday. And probably if you want to also draw from what the Premier of Gauteng said as well, you're welcome to do that, 0861-987-000. We've been focusing largely on young people and small and medium enterprises as well. Our guest is Tebogo Kas as well as Crystal Duncan Williams. Tebogo, I'm told that you requested that you leave at 10:30. No problem there. But I've got a key question for you. Seeing that you are not getting any joy from government, particularly at these crucial stages of, state of the provinces addresses, state of the nation addresses, you still don't see any vision, you still don't see any leadership and all of that. It seems to me that what is now obvious is for small business players to fend for themselves. And if so, how?
That's a million-dollar question, Tabiso. You know, there is a vision, but from our vantage, the vision seems blurry at best, but also not realizable or implemented in the manner that it is expected at worst. But what we believe is there's still ample opportunity for the Gauteng provincial government to ensure that it consults widely and involves stakeholders in this space, because to assume that because certain individuals may be doing certain programs, say with the presidency on youth development or youth empowerment, it doesn't necessarily mean that you shouldn't have an ear for SMEs who could very well play a very critical role in absorbing the skill set that you are trying to produce into the labor market. And that is something that is lacking. There needs to be cogency also in terms of what national government and provincial government's efforts are insofar as helping small businesses. Currently, we see there seems to be talking past each other in terms of allocation or reallocations of resources and making sure that they sing from the hymn book.
Yeah.
Even in areas where government has sought to implement infrastructure projects which could benefit SMEs, we found that there's delays. You know, there are projects that have been devised from the presidency side, which are still to see the day of light.
And the sad part is that if you don't start entrepreneurship at the youth level, then you are killing yourself, because you don't want people to learn lessons of entrepreneurship when they're adults, isn't it?
Yes and no. If you indulge me, yes. You want to have people who are younger because they are more risk. They're not risk averse. They can take risk than somebody who's older, who may have a lot of consideration to make before they take a risk of starting a small business. But also at the same time, you also need experience, because you'd find that people who are more experienced, they will be better placed in terms of knowing what it takes to start a small business. Because being an entrepreneur doesn't necessarily mean you'll be a good business manager, or you'd be able to understand what it takes to run a business. Because entrepreneurship on its own, it takes a lot of elements to make it a success. And yes, much as you have big companies that are started by people without any experiences, you'll take in Facebook, for example. But they did also make sure that as they set up into entities, they lean on the more experienced individuals to come and help them run their enterprises into successful entities as they are today.
Tebogo, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time, sir. We'll continue with Crystal Duncan Williams. And I want to pick up on that issue, Crystal, when we come back from the news, whether we can afford to lower our reliance and expectations from government and find a new pathway of developing ourselves as young people, I suppose, or as, you know, people that are starting off businesses and projects and all of that. Is that possible? If there is such an avenue, where lies that particular avenue? And again, I mean, why isn't that we are also not putting these big companies on the same spotlight as well? Because they claim to be patriotic South Africans, companies, those that have been here from overseas, they claim to love this country. And where is the love when it comes to playing a massive role in terms of developing young people? It's an issue that I want to pick up on. And of course, we'll take your calls as well. Lorato in Compton Park, we'll start with you. Miesha, Pretoria, Hamlet in Acacia, we'll start with you guys. And of course, we'll take your calls, those that are calling 0861-987-000.
9 a.m. to noon. This is Power Talk with Thabiso Kotane.
23 minutes to 11. Crystal, you're still with us, right?
I'm still here, yes.
So, Crystal, is there a chance that we could say, okay, these chaps in government are not implementing that which they say they would do? Can we then, on our own, find movements to develop ourselves as young people, entrepreneurial, job creation, and otherwise? Is there such an avenue, or are we finding ourselves with our hands tight behind our backs?
I think that it's a little bit of both. So Youth Capital has an action plan for shifting gears on youth unemployment. Mm. And we really think that it's going to take all stakeholders to come around this plan if we're really going to shift this massive youth unemployment problem that we have. You know, we're nearing 9 million young people not in education employment. And we are going to need more than a singular solution like government, like big business, like SMEs. We're going to need everybody to come around a shared agenda, really, if we're going to tackle this problem. So to give you an example, you know, the SMEs have historically struggled to access things like the employment tax incentive or other tax incentives related to BBBE because they're small operations. They don't have big HR departments to help with all of the paperwork and the red tape. You know, government could make it easier for SMEs to access that funding. Big businesses could come on board to say, we have the knowledge and expertise of how do you work with a young person? What are the kinds of skills you can give this young employer so that they can really become a valuable addition to your small team?
Do you think big business has come to the fore here, or are they just saving their trillion rand plus and not doing anything about it until the situation is such that it satisfies them?
Well, the research is a bit difficult to unpack. So what you see is, you know, big business is accessing that funding, but it's hard to tell if they're employing more young people than they would have without it, or if they're still employing exactly the same number of young people they would have, but at the same time, they're scoring this big tax break. And the research is very unclear. What we do know is that it has much more impact when small businesses can access things like the ETI. And so we really need to push that, I think, because a lot of these employment initiatives that government has come up with is focused heavily on big business, you know, your big banks, your big corporates creating mass jobs for young people. And we know that's finite. How many jobs a big business, a big corporation can create is limited. And so I think businesses' role should really be to partner with entrepreneurs, to partner with SMEs, and somehow transfer that skill from a big corporate into these smaller businesses so that they can thrive. And I think that's been a bit of a missing link.
Yeah,
we can work on a bit more.
We are also joined by Reg Nkosi, Executive Director, and who's also, you know, economic commentator as well. Reg, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you, Thabiso?
Very well. Bongiwe Kunene is also joining us, Managing Director, Banking Association of South Africa. Good morning to you, Bongiwe.
Good morning.
Yeah. Before I come back to you, Reg and Bongiwe, I must go to Lorato in Compton Park, who's been patiently holding on the line. Lorato, good morning, my brother. Go for it.
Good morning. Thank you, Thabiso, and to your guests. And my question really links to what Crystal has been doing, right? We know that we have over 20 sector education and training authorities, right? And one of the biggest things that I always ask myself, Tabiso, is that we know that these CSAs have employees, they have programs, and they have budgets that ordinarily, although they report to the higher education ministry, but that budget is or there's an allocation from the minister's finance from treasury, right? Why is it that these CSAs are not recalibrated to, because it's about skills development, really, you know, getting a lot more young people into jobs or at least getting gaining some experience. Why is or maybe I may have missed it. Why is there no intentional program to get as many small business owners to be able to absorb young people into jobs where they then use these budgets to help small, because we need capacity to be so as small business owners. Young people need experience and upskilling, right? Mm. Government has a program to facilitate that. Why is it that it is mainly benefiting big business and not necessarily small business? I'll be interested to hear what your guests have to say.
Okay, good stuff. Miesha in Pretoria, good morning.
TK, morning and to your guests, and I'm glad you got Reg there. TK, never put township and business on the same sentence. Those two don't combine at all. There are two issues that I will tell you why, as government, you've got to take care. There is a truck that comes into the township. Every time it is fully loaded. And when it leaves the township, it leaves it empty. What's the reason? Because there's nothing to carry in the township. Nothing is made there. So this truck comes. As a transporter, you know a backload is everything. You don't carry a backload when you leave the township and yet you make your profit. That even shows that you are overcharging the people. There is another truck again that comes into the township empty. When it leaves with a lot of money. It's a cash in transit truck. Those two trucks are a definition of what a township is all about. A township is an open prison. It's an incubator of poverty. Every morning, 04, you see it's a sea of red. Cars leave the township. Car trucks walking, running, because there's nothing you can give. They're going to sell. They're 8 to 10 hours somewhere else, because there's nothing to give in the township. Everything in the township are chock blocked in the morning.
So there is no such thing as the township economy?
Yes. In the evening, it's a sea of white. They're coming back. Now, you got to combine, lastly, you look in my hometown where I come from. You've got an industrial site called Rosslyn, multi-billion. The people who have made it happen, Mabupane, Kharangua, Winterfell, they've sold their life on it. They are not the beneficiaries. You can tell me a single individual who benefited from BMW, from Roslyn, from anything. Nobody. You go to Mamelodi, Waterloo, and including Ford. There is no single Mamelodi person who could have said, I've made my money and I was built as a businessman from these entities. When the president says Ford is putting $2 billion into Mamelodi, it is putting it in its own factory, not in the people. We have never invested in people. Our people have perpetually become slaves.
Okay.
This is what this country is about.
Okay.
So don't talk township and you talk economy. You and me are going to fight.
And I don't want that. Hamlet, Acacia, good morning.
Good morning. Just to take over from what Miesha was saying, you know, when you talk about a $16 billion investment of an automotive park like what Ford is doing there, now, obviously, in the main, your top construction companies we know are the big five already appointed. Downstream opportunities of subcontracting are black people, obviously, and then post that is going to be consumption in buying vehicles. But there's a long-term sustainable opportunity in being part of the value chain of the production of those motor vehicles in a form of component supply. Now, in Ford, for instance, you know, all the parts are bought outside, if not all 90%, because of DHL. You know, it does the clearing and freight and logistics and warehouse of all, I mean, the parts that Ford received from, obviously, various suppliers across Europe and North America. So if we don't look into those downstream opportunities where we can say, wait a minute, I mean, when you produce this vehicle, there must be a high, we know that there is a local component as a policy, but it's not enforced. So government need to obviously move a step further in enforcing this, you know, localization of local component procurement. Most of these automotive companies, not only in automotive, across other sectors, pharmaceutical and so forth and so forth, their procurement spend lies somewhere in Europe. And we miss on that opportunity for us to capture, I mean, that procurement and spend locally and develop, I mean, SMEs.
Hamlet, thank you so much. So, Bongiwe, we are trying to link the relevance of the budget speech to the people on the ground and what they were expecting to hear from the budget speech. But, the issue of banks and the issue of the private sector playing a role in developing, particularly young business people and young people in general. To what extent do you think that the budget speech, Bongiwe, reflected some of the sentiments that have been mentioned by some of our callers here?
Well, I'll start by saying that the budget speech was very measured, and it did give us hope in the sense that it is talking about not increasing state debt. It is talking about not increasing taxes. But the questions that have arisen from the callers, I'm really moved. Let me talk about township economy, for example. The image of the two trucks, one coming in full, leaving empty, the other coming in empty and leaving full. It's a reality that is really sad and hard to bear. As South Africans, we are known for resilience. So I'm just thinking on my feet as I have listened. Maybe what I'm saying is not going to resonate, but here are my thoughts. First, can we not analyze what we consume and then produce it? An example, if one of those trucks is a one bringing bread, if each family eats bread, how could it be that we do not have small bakeries in our communities, because that's where we should be getting our bread? And of course, there is some structural that must be answered in areas that were mentioned. Someone mentioned auto manufacturing. There are opportunities there in the value chain of those auto companies. So they have enterprise development funds. Those give opportunity for small businesses, for any business that is in a township, that it can integrate itself into the value chains of the big suppliers. So how do I make this concrete as an example? If we have people with leather producing skills, whether it's tanning of the hides into soft leather, whether it is building and the seats, even the leather that is in the steering wheels in some of the cars, those are the areas that we should be really negotiating. How much of that work?
Yeah, it's ironic that you say that, Bongiwe, because that's what small businesses are actually saying. To say, can't we be given this small piece of the cake? You know, the steering wheel, the covering, the leather seats, and you know, these low hanging fruits. But you know, the question is, where are those opportunities?
Well, these opportunities sometimes are locked up in long-term contracts. That's why I say we need to analyze this. I'll give you an example, staying with the car. When you go and buy a car, you buy it with the plan of maintenance. We do know that capacity is not based only in town. So if the maintenance plans could be the servicing of these cars, if we could look, is it the competition that is impossible, or is it the contract that binds you to use a particular supplier?
Well,
how do we work with the regulators?
It's a locked system. If I buy a car now, they will recommend an insurance company. Insurance company, when I get into an accident and I call them, they will tell you, you must use the services of this panel beating company. Otherwise, if you use a Mo's panel beating, then you are on your own. So it is interlinked.
Then we need to unlock those opportunities, because Mo's auto paneling, if it meets the standards, if it produces exactly the same service as what you would get, why is Mo not into that value chain? And what does Mo need to have?
Well, it could be because he's black. It could be because he's black.
Country that really wants us to pick up those examples and interrogate them legally and factually.
Reg, the same question I posed to Bongi Webb, you know, to what extent do you think the budget speech matches the aspirations of particularly young people and those that are in the SMME sector in basic terms, if one has to put it that way?
Thanks, Tariso. Firstly, let's accept that this budget was not a measured budget. It was one of the most terrible budgets you could get. For SMEs and young people, they face what I call a double whammy. If you look at the allocations for SMEs, there are very, very little in this budget. In fact, they're cutting. So the whole budget, as we had yesterday, is about cutting expenditure. Now, when you cut expenditure, you're cutting income, national income. You cannot have such type of a budget in the time of depression. So it doesn't work like that in economics. So to have a minister stand at the podium and present such a budget, frankly, it either seems he doesn't understand what he's doing or is being advised very, very badly. Now, SMEs do not have money. So we all know townships do not have money. They need support. But where is the support going to come from? They look to GTI and small business. There's no money there. Poor allocation. They may have to get to the bank. Wongiwe comes from a banking association. Let me explain to you, Teresa. Of 20 applications that go to our banks, only one get approved for SMEs. 19 get rejected. Tell me, how is a township economy going to function when virtually every applicant is refused a loan from the bank? So we can talk about the budget now and talk about SMEs. I can assure you there's a lot of entrepreneurial spirit in the township. There are lots of opportunities that people can in fact look at, but you can't have opportunities when you do not have money. So this government, this budget, is actually paying lip service to the issue of SMEs. Similarly, even these banks, like I talked before, they're just paying lip service to the issue of SMEs. We have this bank guarantee that Treasury and the Reserve Bank have put together. It is only benefiting white companies, the very white companies that go into the township and reap the townships. This can't be an economy for SMEs. Yeah. This can't be an economy for the black majority at all. It is an economy for the very, very few.
Yeah.
So we talk of opportunities. Oh, fine. It's just a word. There's nothing that this government is doing to assist the black majority who continue to suffer.
Let me go to Crystal. Crystal, as we round off, you heard Lurato there lamenting the fact that CETAS could come in here and bolster the small business sector with young people in order to expand capacity. But it seems as if it's not happening. The only people that are being bolstered by these young people from the CETAS are big businesses themselves. Where do we go from here, Crystal?
Well, you know, as I've been saying, I really think that the inefficiencies in these systems need to be addressed. We can't keep funding CETAs and they don't work for young people and for the people they're supposed to serve. You know, this government apathy around things just take long and that's the way it is. You know, lots of callers have spoken about access to funding for small businesses. Why are these processes so inefficient? In 2021, when we've had to go online, there's lots of technology we could make use of to make these processes more streamlined. Why is government not doing that? To make things more efficient. You know, there was an online system for young people to follow the trail of their qualifications, whether it's through a TVET or a CETA. That's one way in which we could really make it easy for young people to know where their certificates are, where the process is, and kind of unlock this blockage of certification, which we think is a real issue. And so we hope that you know, things don't end here with a budget speech, that these plans and implementation plans, and we don't just have these conversations, but we actually take them into our spaces and say, what do we really need to unlock these opportunities for young people? We need certification, yeah. We need big business to share their skills, and we need to grow, as people have said, the township and rural economies. That's where young people are. Let's take the, you know, take work into those spaces and grow those economies.
Crystal Duncan Williams, thank you so much. Bongiwe Kunene, thank you so much, as well as Reg Nkosi, for participating in this particular discussion. Lots and lots of people calling in as well, wanting to participate in this discussion. Unfortunately, due to time constraints, we couldn't, but keep your views coming through on Twitter. Dumisang saying, speaking of bakeries in the township, Cyril Ramaphosa is responsible for the fall of Ramulope Bakery that supplied us with bread in Mabopane, Hammanskraal, Rustenburg in the 80s and the 90s. Tsebo says, Prati Bongiwe is not in touch with reality. All that she's saying was said already by the same SMMEs. You'll never get into the value chain supply of components in the auto manufacturing. Why? Because we are black. Trust me, I've tried and many are like me. Shack Tank says, we are doing exactly what you are asking, Tabiso. We are doing something on our own. No corporate, no government so far, but we are moving forward. We will create jobs. Follow us for more information. Shack Tank says that.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.